Hi everyone, my name is Adam Small.
And I'm Jake Moses.
Welcome to our podcast, A Performer's Pathway.
A podcast adventure to help guide and navigate your musical life and career.
As a prelude to every episode, we'd like to remind our listeners that this podcast is about the other side of the musical coin. One side, which you see a lot at our website, mymusicmasterclass.com, is what to do in the practice room. And the other side is how to maximize your talent and skills in the real world, and that's what this podcast is about. Also, if you have a few extra seconds to spare,
which is technically only 3 beats at 60 BPM,
please subscribe to our show on your podcast app of choice and rate us 5 stars. You can leave a comment about absolutely anything, too. That small act of kindness will really help us expand our audience and continue to create new episodes.
And lastly, word of mouth is always super helpful. So if you like what you hear, please tell the world.
Before we get started here, I want to mention our monthly guidebook slash workbook called The Motivated Musician. It's geared towards serious musicians and it offers challenges, exercises, professional advice, and more to help keep your musical life and career on track. Also, as an extra perk, members get exclusive discounts from My Music Masterclass, and if you want to learn more, go to mymusicmasterclass.com, hit subscribe in the header menu, and you'll be good to go. Hey all, we are super psyched to be with Mike Moreno, and Mike's a great player, as you know, great guitarist and composer, and he's played with about a million people, and he's a great solo artist. And we're super happy to have you here, man. Like, how are you doing?
I can't complain because I think of all the times that this, you know, something like this could have happened while I've been in New York, this is probably the best time it could have happened, like, in my life as far as, like, where I am in my career and, like, the possibilities that I have to kind of make a living even though I'm not traveling.
Right.
Which is... was like totally freaky when it first came upon us. Like, I was just like, oh my god, you know, like, what am I gonna do, you know?
So you're talking about the pandemic, not the attempted coup that happened yesterday
with, like, exactly,
a bunch of assholes.
No, this is like in March, I was just like, oh well, it's gonna be fine, you know, like, all my gigs in March are gonna get canceled, and you know, but then in April we'll be back, you know, by the end of April for sure, you know. And then it just kept getting further and further back,
and now it's like, who knows at this point.
Well, now it's like, who's gonna be around, who's still gonna be standing? So, and then also, who's gonna be standing that's willing, that has the money to start bringing in international acts and artists, people from out of town? And, you know, they're gonna book 6 months in advance, like usual. So
absolutely,
it's not gonna be like it's just a straight back to working, you know, as soon as they open up, we know we're back on planes. It's gonna be about another 6 months before any of us really can do anything significant as far as travel.
So explain to people, I mean, I know what you've been up to in terms of your live stream thing, and it's amazing. I mean, the quality of what you have going on is great. We can rap about all that, but how did this kind of come about? I'm sure probably from the lack of shit that was going on, of course, but
exactly.
I mean, like, you do have a pretty detailed rig, and it's great quality, so maybe you could explain it.
Well, yeah, I mean, when this all first hit, I did not want to do live streaming. So it was funny. It was like the lockdown happened, and then like day two, people were like turning on their phones and like just desperately trying to get attention.
Right.
And it just sounds and looks bad.
Yeah.
Sounded and looked bad, and it was all just kind of weird. And you know, first it was like those videos that people would like, everybody would record themselves playing, and then you would splice it together and stuff like that. And I just didn't want to do any of that stuff. And, you know, all my neighbors were telling me, oh man, you need to do some live streaming and go out to the rooftop and get your band here and record it.
What?
And, you know,
like, I want your neighbors.
And I just
neighbors?
Didn't want to do that. Yeah. My neighbors are cool. It's a lot like, unfortunately, all of them kind of had to move out. Like, there's so many artists that were living here and just, you know, freelance people that were living in this building that had to move out just because, you know, they weren't making any money.
Yep,
that's tough.
But at first I was like, no, I'm... So the first idea that came to me was, you know, to design this course that I taught over the summer. So once the semester of teaching ended, which that kind of kept me afloat, at least I had all the school gigs, In the summer when that was going to end, I knew I had to come up with something. So I designed that, that course. To me, I had a choice. I could either record something and put it out, which could have not done anything, and I would have spent a lot of money, or I could have did the thing that I knew people are willing to pay for, which is anything educational. I kind of joke about it, but it's true. It's like people are not willing to play for your music, but they're willing to pay to know how you did it.
I've said that many times to people. Yeah. I'm like, so no one wants to hear you, but they want to be you. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's like, just show me what, you know, show me what, how I can do what you do. But, you know, what you do, I want for free. So in the summer, I was like, the only way I'll get myself through 4 months of no work is to come up with a teaching idea. And luckily, I already had the idea like floating around in my head, and it was pretty much 60% of the work was done. So I just had to put it on literally on the screen. So I did that Standards from Film course in the summer. And that kind of like just got me through 5 months of no gigs, you know?
Man, so, great.
Yeah, I was super happy with that. It could have been better, of course, quality wise and more people involved, but the amounts of people that were involved, it literally just paid for 5 months of my bills. So,
yeah, which a lot of people don't have, you know? So, I mean,
exactly. Yeah. So then it was, yeah, I was really fortunate. And, but, of course, what I always do when I get a bunch of money is I spend it all on the next project. And the next project was basically upgrading everything. So, you know, in March, I didn't even own a microphone. Like, I didn't have a microphone in my house. I had nice guitars and nice amps and all that stuff, but no video cameras, no cameras of any good quality other than my iPhone, and definitely no microphone. So I just basically bought everything that I needed to upgrade the course because I wanted to start doing workshops for schools. I knew the school year was coming back, and I was like, well, they're not going to have any guest artists, but they're going to have the money, the funding, hopefully. So then my plan was to do like remote workshops and masterclasses. So then I got a soundboard and all the lighting, all the microphones, cameras, everything I upgraded. And then once I had it, I was like, well, now I can do live streams, you know, so if it's good quality and good audio. And I got the idea just to do duos, you know, something that that's kind of, you wouldn't normally see me doing, like playing with another guitar player. I mean, I play a lot of piano duos and stuff like that, but, you know, it was an opportunity to get all these guys that are mm-hmm. kind of my peers and in the scene, like Galat Hexaman and Yotam Silverstein.
Didn't you do something with Chico too?
Chico's going to do one in February.
All right.
It's also therapy for all you guys, man. You know, like even,
yeah,
you imagine. Know, people talking about comping and everything. It's we don't get to play with anyone anymore. Like we, you know, just a one other person to play with is so mentally healthy.
Plus it also sets up like, I know that you're trying to be safe, and that's actually cool. Like you have two guitarists, you don't have to be right on top of each other. You don't have to have a piano in the room or something crazy. You know, it works out logistically.
Yeah, you know, and you know, if one of us gets sick and dies, that's one less guitar player, you know.
More gigs, yeah, exactly.
More gigs, man. Yeah. It's like we're trying.
It's not as if New York is turning the corner. More clubs are not opening, you know.
Yeah.
Jazz Standard's gone already.
You know, this is really my plot, is to just like give every guitar player COVID.
He's like, why don't you go? Yeah, just use that seat right there, you know.
It used to be like, man, I'm gonna break that guy's fingers when I see him, and now it's just like I'm gonna give him a virus.
It's like the old Berkeley world I used to hear about when people would sabotage each other.
Yeah. You want to drink
razors
here,
and pianos.
Here, have some coffee. I just made this. It's great. No, it's single origin. You know, just drink this.
Yeah,
no, but it's actually single been, origin. It actually has been therapeutic to kind of like put ego aside and just be like, man, let's just play some music. Let's like not try to go at each other's throats and with guitar playing, and just like, let's really think about what songs we can play and what, where our musical tastes kind of come together and, you know, try to make a musical set and, you know, leave all that other stuff. And, you know, cause it's rare that I really do the guitar hang, only with a few people. Like me and Nir are good friends, Nir Felder.
Sure.
And, you know, and And a long time ago, me and Galad used to hang out, you know, and play together and stuff. But no one really ever gets to see that stuff. So it's just behind like closed doors, like we're hanging and playing. Right. So it's kind of cool to like just let that come out, you know, and show people like what the guitar hang usually is like, you know.
It's a perfect time
that
for
Whitfield
it.
One was right. Dope.
Oh, yeah. That and you did one. Cool. Yeah, you did one. Oh, yeah. Bernstein. Man. Field. Yeah.
Yeah. And then with Whitfield, we did an interview, and also with Mike Stern.
Yep.
We did an interview. Yeah. So, and that I've never done before. And, you know, there was, you know, with the audio, there was some setbacks with the microphones and stuff, but we still got it together. And then, so now my engineer, she knows exactly how to use my board now. She's usually does like, digital boards, and my board is analog. So there's a couple of things where if I had just taken 10 seconds and went over there, I could have fixed it. But now we know she knows exactly how my setup works. So all the mic stuff will be cool for the next interview.
And you guys play the same guitar builder, I think, right? I think you were talking about that.
Me and
him.
Mark both play Marchionne guitars. Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. And I remember you guys making fun of Nier playing Fender.
Yeah. So Marchionne was super psyched to have that out.
Well, yeah, I can't. Nier was funny. And we know each other well enough to where I can kind of mess with him a little bit. But like, you know, because he had a Marchionne for a little while, and he wasn't using it, so Steve just asked for it back. And
oh man!
And so
you're saying Nier did this?
Yeah. And then, but at during that live stream, he said he was like, "Man, I'll trade you guitars." I was like, "Oh, you had your chance." But I said it like really soft, but he heard me. But we just laughed.
I love that. That's so good.
So. I mean, what are you talking into now? Your talk mic sounds great. Is it just a large diaphragm something?
Actually, this is the Shure SM7B.
Right, which is what I have. I just can't see it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I have it kind of low.
Yeah, no, they're perfect. It's one them and, you know, there's a couple amazing talk mics, and that's at the top of the list.
Yeah, for podcasting, this is kind of the go-to. I mean,
or interviews or radio or any of that shit, you know?
Yeah. This is actually my engineer's. She left it here. And then I have another mic that I usually use. But today I was like, I'm going to use the Shure and check it out. It's a podcast, so
they're great. Use it. So what else are you doing? Just, I mean, in terms of gear, what else do you have so you can kind of tell people what's up? What kind of analog board do you have?
It's a Soundcraft Signature 12.
Nice. Oh, those are great.
Very nice.
Yeah. So I talked to a few engineers. I was like, man, if you had a, you know, I mean, I was willing to spend up to, I was looking at some boards that were around $1,200. And they were like, man, just go for the more tracks, you know, like more inputs rather than, you know, the quality. It'll be fine.
Yeah, I mean, you know. Yeah, the pre's are, I mean, you could always go down that rabbit hole. I mean, you know, you can get Neve quality pre's. You can get a Neve, actual Neve board. But, you know, at a certain point, there's going to be something in your chain that's fucking it up, you know, so.
Yeah.
especially you guitar players.
It'll be like the A to D converter or something, you know, just.
Right. Yeah. But right now I'm going through the RME Babyface Pro.
Perfect.
So just for things like this, like Zoom and things like, I usually just use the RME, but like for recording in the sessions, I go through the Soundcraft.
Great.
Yeah. And you guys are using like your full amps when you're playing, right? Or are you doing like a load box, reactive load or anything?
Oh no,
like
we're
that?
Using the amps.
Nice.
Yeah.
So you do have cool neighbors.
and it's, no, it gets kind of, you know, certain people, it got a little bit loud. Like with Mark, we were definitely playing
pretty loud.
You guys
are vibing, man. That was awesome.
But my next door neighbors are so cool. They're in their kind of mid 60s, and they used to live in the West Village in the 70s. Like they grew up, and they were just like, oh, you're just like, no, you're just playing jazz. Like, that's totally fine. You know, it's like background music to them.
I mean, it should be. To be honest, like during this pandemic, it would be nice to have neighbors that actually sounded good. You know, you don't want like a like a violinist like learning how to play, or like a trumpeter like in
which
high
is the
school.
Case in a lot
you know
of places.
No.
Like, people picking up instruments for the first time.
Yeah, exactly.
No, and I mean, the people who have come by, they're just like, oh, we love the music. You know, it's like, and it's only for an hour.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I'm teaching during the day, but even then they think that it's a performance. Sometimes I'm like, no, it's just practicing and teaching.
They're going to be mad when you send them an invoice.
Yeah.
That'd be funny.
Yeah. But well, my neighbors said they have watched the streams and contributed.
Nice. Man. Little,
that's awesome, bit. Man. Yeah.
All right. So what kind of cameras? I know you have a Blackmagic switcher. Is it all Blackmagic cams or do you have like A7s?
No,
or?
I wish I had those Blackmagics. I have a Sony A6400. Mm-hmm. Nice. That's the main like front camera. And then I have two GoPros until like two GoPro Hero 7s.
Great.
Yep.
The black ones. Until I can get two more of these Sonys.
So you just want to, for the GoPros, you probably just need a wider angle on those, right? Is that why you got those? And because they're tiny?
Well, at first it was just budget. I got two for $500, which was...
that's a pretty good deal.
So, yeah, it was a good deal. And then they look pretty good, actually.
They do. Yeah, we have.
And I wasn't, you know, I didn't need them for audio. So I just needed some angles at first. I think the first thing I did that I got the GoPros for was a stream for Scullers in Boston.
Okay.
And so that was the first time, that was a disaster because I did not know that they come with these factory settings that they'll shut off every 20 minutes.
Yep.
The GoPro? So then
the GoPros come automatically. It's like a factory setting that they'll shut down 20 minutes. What? Doesn't matter what you're doing with them. Yeah. So then they kept going off and then I was driving me crazy and I was playing solo guitar. So, and it was the first time I had really done anything more than 20 minutes. Cause I had checked, you know, I'd use them and, but not for 20 minutes straight. So then after that stream, I went in and Jesus. Figured out there was nothing online, nothing on the website.
That's such bullshit.
There was tons of, their blog on GoPro on their site was littered with people asking why are the cameras going off after 20 minutes? My camera keeps going off. And they would just be like, well, you need to do an update. You need to do this and this and that.
Right.
It's stupid though, because that's a DSLR thing.
It's a DSLR thing.
Sensor. No, but
you're saying that it would actually shut down or would it just stop recording?
It would just, it would turn itself off.
See, that's different. A DSLR will stop recording, but it won't shut itself off.
Shut itself off. Yeah. So the GoPros just automatically shut down.
And why would that be acceptable for an action camera? Like, you know, if you're snowboarding down a hill, you know.
It's so stupid. But also no one from GoPro said, oh, did you go in the factory settings and turn the 20-minute auto shutdown off? Not one. I found like one video that had like 10 views of some guy in like fucking, you know, Latvia or something. And he just made this video of like how to turn it off. And I was like, oh, it's a factory setting. I was like, that's insane. Yeah. So anyway,
it's nonsense.
But other than that, the GoPros are killing. They actually look pretty good, especially if you go in and you mess with the aperture and the shutter speed and you custom do everything for each angle.
Yeah. No. And if you have them in the same spot each time, I know you do because you have it set up.
Yeah. I put them in the same spot and then, but you know, they're both set a little bit different because one spot gets them a little bit more light or, you know, so it's three cameras now. Two GoPros and that Sony until I can get three Sonys. Because also the A6400 is also the only camera on the market that you can just keep recording. You can stream all day with it. It won't overheat and it won't shut itself off.
It's like a camcorder.
See, I bought the Blackmagic cinema cameras before the Pocket Cinema for that reason.
Okay.
So I can go unlimited. Yeah. But like those cameras, I mean, whew.
They're for cheaper this price, now, for eight.
Yeah.
For $900 or eight something, however much the Sonys are, those are the only ones that really do it.
Great. So you run a few mics. You probably have a talk mic and you have an engineer, so she can mute
it. Well, actually, the live stream is super simple. It's just stereo mics in the room.
Oh, great.
Because I don't like the sound of close mics on a guitar amp. If it's just alone, if we're in the studio and there's room mics and close mics, that's cool. But to simplify, I don't have good, I need to get better stereo mics, to do it all through the board. So right now it's just, I'm actually, the sound is coming from this, old Canon camera that no one makes any, that Canon doesn't make anymore, that the mics on it are killing. It's like, I've always done recorded my live gigs with that camera.
It's crazy.
And so I was like, why not just do the stream with it? And so I'm not using the board at all for the streams. That Canon camera is going straight into the Blackmagic and that's the audio for the streams. It sounds better than through the board.
Wow.
And with fucking a Roy or a $1,200, you know, $1,300 mic.
Right.
That little Canon camera sounds better to me. And also, but we are recording to Logic from the board. So the close mics are, yeah, it's just, we're recording a session every stream. Nice. But the stream itself is only, for at least for the first initial live stream, it's just that little Canon camera. Mm-hmm. And then later on, I can mix in the close mics.
So you have your engineer doing the switching, or are you just automatically
switching? She's doing the switching, right. And she's setting up the stream, and she's just making sure, you know, just in case anything goes wrong, really. And she's, you know, I'm not really that great with Logic, so she's doing all the recorded session stuff.
Perfect.
Is her background audio engineering, or is she coming from like television, digital media, like TriCaster systems and all that stuff?
She's a musician, so she studied composition and all, but she does sound at the, she did sound at the Jazz Standard before it closed. That was her main gig, yeah. So that's how I met her, Laura.
So how is this, monetizing through like PayPal, or how do you do these donations?
It's PayPal, and most people are doing PayPal, and then a little bit of Venmo. Basically, Venmo is just people that are in the U.S.
Got it.
So, all the international stuff is coming in through PayPal, yeah.
I didn't know that.
And people are still, you find that people are still supporting after this time? Because I know that...
Yeah.
You know, it started off where everyone was supporting because, you know, they felt for us, you know, they felt for the musicians. And, you know, I'm always nervous that there's going to be a point where, you know, the economy gets so bad that it's going to dry up, but hopefully it's still good, you know?
I feel like that's what the quality's for though.
Yeah. I don't know if since I wasn't live streaming at the very beginning, I don't know, but from what I know, with everything I've done in the past and up to now, that whatever your social media following is, how that translates into money is like around 5%.
Right.
Yeah.
5% of your followers actually will be willing to pay for anything you're doing.
Right.
Yep.
And, you know, and then there's 60% of your followers that are just hoping you'll follow them back. And then there's like another 35% of people that actually care about what you're doing, but they still won't pay for it, you know?
They'll at least try to spread the word, you know what I mean? That's like what they think the contribution is, which it is. It helps. And that's a great thing to do.
That's an accurate, you know, depiction of social media for everyone at this point. I mean,
because I've dealt with people that are just like, oh man, we have this many, we're getting all these followers. I was like, that's okay. It looks good when somebody goes to your Instagram page, but it doesn't translate to money.
No, and it doesn't always translate to like likes or comments even. You know, you could have 20,000 followers and then you put a post up and you have like 100, you know, something. It's like, it doesn't always show up in the feeds. These algorithms change daily. Like, I don't even know.
Right.
I mean, not that Facebook, everyone knows it's kind of a dinosaur right now, but literally like, I literally go on sometimes just because I have to do business on it. And my feed is just crazy. Like, I don't even see people that I've known for you that I actually want to see. I'm like, oh, what's my old friend? But you know, it's like, I don't know what some math are using, but it's not really working.
It's some people that show up in my Facebook feed that I'm just like, I've never even met this person. And you know, it's like they're all every day I see everything they're posting, and it's weird. But yeah, I don't, for advertising, I don't mess with Facebook at all, unless it's linked to my Instagram. But let's say if I put up a post, it gets 2,000 likes on Instagram, you know, it will get 40 likes on Facebook.
I know.
It's like, it's insane.
What's your strategy now with social media? And because, you know, that stuff that musicians always want to know about, what's been helping you, or what have you noticed that people enjoy? Like little playing clips?
Other than being a badass?
Well, no. I mean, you know, you have to do like the, you know, you're not like advertising yourself all the time, of course, because that's not how social media works. But what is your strategy kind of?
I try to not post all the time, but I know that's kind of not the best thing to do when you're trying to get more followers and all this stuff. But to me, since I realized that it doesn't really translate into money, the likes and the followers, that I feel like just, you know, I'm a little bit more choosy about what I post, but I've been trying to get better at posting that kind of like, you know, stuff that people want to see, more clips of you playing, which is kind of why all this YouTube and streaming stuff worked out, because I hadn't really concentrated on that at all in the past, because I was working, because I was just like, well, I'm out here, like, why do I need to do the YouTube thing?
I know.
But now it's like, yeah, wow, okay. My yeah. channel was not together at all at the beginning of this. So yeah, I'm trying to, you know, do a little bit more of that. Maybe even post some videos from the past that I never did anything with. And just putting more content on, especially now that Instagram has the TV channel thing, Instagram TV or whatever it's called. So I've been trying to put more stuff on there and, you know, but whatever the best thing that works is just like, you know, guitar porn pics, you know,
I know
it's like
pretty much
if I put, you know, I could be in like the most amazing, landscape. You know, while I'm on tour, and I'll take a photo of like this most amazing thing I've ever seen, and it'll be like, you know, 80 likes or 180 likes, and I put like, you know, a guitar next to like, you know, a fucking pile of trash, and it's like, you know, it's 1800 likes. You know, it's just the same guitar that I've been playing for like however many years, and that's what people care about. That's what I'm saying. It's like they don't care about your music or your, you know, anything exciting. They just want to know like what gear are you using.
If you had a funny looking cat like next to your guitar, you'd break the fucking internet.
Yeah, that's I thought about that. I was like, if I put a picture of my guitar with like a little cute kitten next to it, it would, I think the internet would explode.
In a really attractive person doing yoga. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
At that point, I think you've solved it.
Yeah.
That's a secret. That's what the movie
is. Or if I was like a, you know, a 14-year-old girl like playing a Metallica song, then.
On drums, yes.
On drums. Exactly. And then 8 million views.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Crushing it.
You have to do a tap solo for no reason, though. Like, you could just do that with three fingers. You don't need to tap it.
It's like, how do these people, like, with no gigs, have the most followers?
I don't know
never played a gig, never did a tour in their life, never made a recording, but yet they're like internet sensations.
I know. And you know, I think that at some point, if you're big enough, you can monetize if you're smart. But sometimes it's just like, I don't know. I mean, I know that some people really capitalize on it and they're real smart and they can make their YouTube personality make a shit ton of money. But yeah, I mean, as a musician, it's tough to see that.
Yeah. I mean, it's if you devoted all your energy to that, for sure. Which is, I mean, I have a new respect also while I say all that stuff. Thank God for those vloggers that are, you know, putting up how to do pretty much everything, you know, like this thing with the GoPro. Like I said, there's some guy in his garage, you know, like while his mom is making, you know, dinner or something, and he's making a video about how to keep the GoPro on for more longer than 20 minutes. It's you know,
it's like life-saving.
It's crazy, man. It's and they're really, some of them are incredible, like incredibly good at explaining things. So and what I found out while trying to do promo for like these live streams is it is not easy, man. It's talking on and without making mistakes and, you know, trying not to stutter and like, or have too many like dead spaces. And it's really hard. And you see these guys and they're, or women, and they're just like killing it. Just like, it sounds like they've been doing it their whole lives.
You know? Some of them have a lot of jump cuts and you could tell that they edit every sentence. True. But I mean, you're right. I mean, if you listen to the radio, like AM sports or whatever, I mean, it's like those guys are professionals. You know, you listen to a real sports announcer, they never say like or they just crush it. You know what I mean?
It's just
and
on the spot. And
or stand-up comedians, same thing.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah
it's like one take,
totally. Just,
that's what they do. I mean, it's the same thing. It's like musicians, you know.
Exactly.
Can really play, and it's just like, okay, cool, I learned, you know, this is the tune, let's play it, let's get it over with.
It's a different skill, you know. And I've had that discussion with a lot of people doing videos, of course, because musicians are it's not necessarily, you know, great at or comfortable talking, you know what I mean? Some people are naturally very good and they have that masterclass rhythm where they've done a ton of it and they're just plug and play. But a lot of times it's difficult and, you know, it's difficult for everyone. It's difficult for me, you know, it's difficult in general.
Right. And I've taught a lot. So I thought I was good at it. And I can't, if it's about music, like just about the guitar, I can kind of, just like we did those videos. I mean, those are pretty much straight takes, you know, 45 minute.
Yep.
That's because, especially at that time, I was teaching so much when we did those first videos.
You were dialed in.
It was just like, oh, just push play, you know? I'm just going to talk about what I usually talk about. But when it comes time to like, oh, let's talk about what do I have to say about, I don't know, Mark Whitfield or like Peter Bernstein or something. Right. And then it's like, oh, man.
It's like they're great. I don't know. I've known them for a long time.
So and then I was like, you know, I was just like having a nervous breakdown, like trying to do some of these promo videos, like, you know, at home. And just get it to where you just in sync with the video behind you and all that kind of stuff. And but it was definitely a learning curve. So then I was like, man, total like respect to those people who do it all the time and like video editing and all that stuff. I mean,
yeah, it's tricky. I mean, what are you using to edit? Are you using Premiere or?
Man, I just still been using iMovie.
Nice. I mean, to be honest, but, like if you don't need anything better, just stick with it.
But also, I mean, I've worked out like the Blackmagic thing to where I do all of the like the promo video stuff that I do. I do the background as its own video, and then I just put it on the green screen behind me and talk over it. So then I don't have to be controlling. At first, the very first like the Peter Bernstein video I did, I was doing it live, and I was like, man, this is almost impossible to do it. So then so now I just figuring that out for me was like, oh my god, I felt like I just accomplished something. But yeah, I mean, I am going to upgrade and get Final Cut Pro and all that stuff.
You don't need to. You can, if you want right now, you can just switch over to DaVinci Resolve. It's a full suite. You have, it was made originally for
color. It came free with the Blackmagic.
It's free,
design.
Right?
Yeah. One of the most incredible programs ever.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
You don't even need it. It's amazing. I just finally bought it, but I've been using it for free forever.
Jake actually works as an editor too. So, I mean, for other companies. So he actually is better, much better at editing than I am, you know?
I wouldn't pull a trigger on Final Cut. Just use Resolve because it's probably going to take over the world at some point.
Right.
I got to go find that code that came with the Blackmagic.
And you don't even need it. Honestly, you can just download it for free. It's like you won't need anything that you need to pay for like years.
Right. Okay. You mean unless you needed like advanced color correction or something?
Yeah, like I do color correction with it and sometimes I'll like blurs and matting out stuff and tracking, but that stuff's still like 60% all there for free. I don't know how much longer that's going to be, but definitely jump on that.
That sounds fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So during this time, I mean, besides this, I'm sure that your live stream rig has been keeping you somewhat sane and, you know, fulfilled in a way. I mean, is there anything else you're doing to try to, I don't know, you know, that's non-musical to keep somewhat sane? Are you like going for walks, exercising, like meditating, anything positive or drinking heavily?
Drinking. Yeah. I mean, definitely not drinking heavily, but I've definitely spent a lot of money on amazing wine. I mean, but at the same time, I'm saving so much money by not traveling. It's this weird thing of like, I travel all the time, but I also on average spend about at least a third to sometimes half of the money that I'm making while I'm on the road because I just love half the places I go to.
I know.
Yeah. It's like,
and you got to go to the restaurants and everything.
Yeah. I mean, if I'm going to be in Tokyo, if I'm going to be in Paris or, you know, or somewhere in Italy, it's like, it's why even do it if you're just working, you know? So
totally.
Even if I have like 4 hours free, like 2 in the afternoon and 2 after the gig, I'm going to totally like take advantage and go and spend $100 on dinner, like at some amazing place or, you know, otherwise it's just really boring and kind of depressing, like touring.
And then all your tastes end up being all the stuff that's not comped. So you're like, I want some grappa, you know, give me some grappa. And it's like, they don't have that at the bus, you know, like, God damn it.
Yeah. But I've been trying to like, you know, I exercise like at least a few times a week. I'm not like crazy about it. I don't go to a gym or anything like that. I do everything. I've always done everything in a hotel room. So, I don't even go to the gyms when I travel. So I have my like little in the room kind of routine that I do just to, you know, like maintenance, playing guitar for this many years, it's like destroyed my back and, you know, shoulders and neck and all that stuff. So I just try to keep that. I'm basically just trying to keep my pain level at the age, you know, at normal for my age, you know,
right. Without taking oxy.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, I have my little routine I do that really helps, you know, especially like just not having that routine of leaving the house all the time, you know. Mm-hmm. Sometimes that just getting up early, going to the airport, getting on a plane, getting off, and that routine of going to soundcheck, it just keeps you moving all the time. Yep. But at home, you know, it's like, oh man, even if you're busy,
I know,
you're just still not walking more than like a few feet at a time.
So no, especially yeah, when it's cold, you know.
And then now that it's cold, I'm not going for walks. Like, so in the summer, you know, I would have my little like 45 minute or an hour walk that I would do, you know, all the time. So yeah, I mean, I try to do that kind of stuff. And, but honestly, I've been insanely like just like immersed in this new world of like designing the course over the summer. That took up all that summer. No. And then when the live stream stuff started, just learning how to do all of this and like really kind of get it to the point where, you know, it wasn't a big deal to do these streams or to do the masterclass courses. And so I just learning all this new technology stuff that I, and even stuff on my computer, like Keynote and that I never used and stuff like that. And
you could put digital producer on your resume.
Yeah. I mean, you're right. I mean, these are skills that suddenly everyone needs to get together. And if you didn't have it together, you'd basically be screwed unless you're an outlier and you've had a really good following already, like you do.
Yeah.
Then you could kind of like cram yourself into it. But typically people build this stuff over a long time, you know?
Yeah. I mean, to kind of have to be like, okay, I got a month before I got to release this thing or start this thing. Mm-hmm. So that's not much time at all. So some people have been doing it for years, you know? And So it was a couple of months of just every night staying up to like 4:30 in the morning, watching like YouTube videos, mm-hmm. reviews on every camera that's ever existed, every microphone, you know, like every soundboard, like interface and like all this kind of stuff.
That's the way to do it.
I mean, I kind of just was totally obsessed. I would say from like the end of August until mid-November, like was just totally, I didn't leave my house very much.
I could feel that when I watched one of your first ones. I was like, I appreciate this because I know what you did. Like, I know what you've been doing. Because I went down that same rabbit hole.
And I can't even look.
It's awesome.
Yeah. It's hard for me to even watch the first live stream because it at least the lighting is way better and the camera settings and all that stuff. But I mean, even though the music with Peter is killing, but I looked at it, I was like, "Oh man, it looks bad."
Yeah, but dude, it's appreciated, dude. Like we've been trying to tell our little world of My Music Masterclass and like some of the podcasts we've been doing is just the quality is worth it. It's appreciated, and people will appreciate it because they'll see it.
And plus, the sea of live streams is vast now. So, you should try to produce something that's not just a phone. You know what I mean?
Exactly. Like,
I mean, especially the audio and you know, more than one angle is beautiful. It just, you have to imagine that if someone was at a club, they would be immersed in something. And now they're watching like one crappy angle, you know? So it's nice. Yeah. It's nice to spruce it up. I think it helps get people in the seats.
The next vibe is like to get the sliding cameras, you know,
a panner.
Those are cool. Those little systems.
But first, getting these the updated cameras. That in itself is going to be $3,000. You know, it's like just getting two more of these because with the lens, that's the thing. Yep. Is the camera okay? You can get it for $850.
People don't
realize
that.
But then the lens is $400.
Yeah.
Are those mirrorless? I think those are mirrorless.
Yeah.
Right?
The Sony. Yeah. Yeah. The Sony. And then I got like the Sigma 16mm. That's kind of like the vlogger standard setup, you know.
Yeah.
Unless you were willing to spend another $1,000 on this next Sony up, but that one shuts itself off and it kind of overheats sometimes.
Man, is there no workaround? Because sometimes in the DSLRs you can like add a piece of software to it that will like continue.
You don't really want to.
I've heard like if you have to do something to the SD card, someone told me, like at least with the Canons, you put something on the SD cards and then it controls how the camera reads it.
Gotta put
but you do risk burning it out though. That's why.
Oh,
it's
really?
Like you don't really know, you know, you don't want that thing to heat up too much.
Yeah.
All right, I see what you're saying.
I'm totally fine with this camera. I mean, for the moment,
looks
know,
great.
Until you know, when that, when I have the money to get some really expensive cameras, then I'll just have somebody, you know, controlling them. You know, so,
it looks clear and looks good, man. I mean, I wouldn't worry about it. I mean, it's especially, you know, with the quality around there.
Right. I'm sure it could look better. It's just, I don't know how to, I haven't really messed with it all too much.
Yeah. I've loved everything you've done, man. It's all looked great. Well, it sounded amazing.
Yeah. I just need to get somebody here. I'm sure like somebody who really knows cameras and lighting, they can come in here and work with what I have. I just haven't had someone to do that yet.
No. I mean, you're doing the right thing and you're doing it by yourself. I mean, and this is another question, but it was something I was thinking about. I know that you've been teaching a fair amount. Have mm-hmm. you been getting a lot of the questions from the students, or just what am I doing? Like, what can I do right now? Or you know, give me hope, or how can I monetize? Is that something they even talk to you about or no?
They haven't so much been asking about that as more. It's still just basically people trying to get better.
Okay.
And the funny thing is that the people who live in cities that don't really have that much of a music scene, or at least a jazz scene, it kind of doesn't really affect them in the way that it affects people living in LA or New York or Paris or Berlin or something. Whereas, or Tokyo even, to where, like, you know, the live scene has completely stopped. But a lot of the people I've been teaching, like, live in cities that, you know, even if things were open, they didn't have a really good place to go hear some music, you know? So,
right. I see what you're
saying. I think a lot of their questions are still kind of related to, just getting better. And the students themselves, like in the schools, like Manhattan School of Music, Temple, you know, they're still able to play at school. So at least they're able to do that. And, I mean, most of the guitar players, I mean, even when I was in school, I was working, but I wasn't working as, you know, there weren't that many great gigs. But a lot of my students, even in college, they're not working that much to begin with. So,
right.
They're just still trying to get their stuff together. So, but it's just a drag that they can't go see music. That's what's a drag.
I mean, it's a very different world right now. Yeah. I mean, you were at the New School, right? So
I went to New School. Yeah.
Right. And you were with, I mean, you're from Houston, and didn't you go to school with Jason Moran and Harlan and all those guys?
Well, those guys are older than me, but I started right after Eric left. Right. So, and Eric was still there after Jason left. Right. So yeah, but it's the same school. I was there with Glasper.
Right.
Kendrick Scott was there, Walter Smith, Jamire Williams, and Mark Kelly.
It's a great group.
Yeah, some killing musicians.
Go ahead.
Yeah, class of 97. We all graduated 97, and then Kendrick and Walter graduated in 98. So they're a year younger than me and Rob. Yeah.
So when you were at the New School, I know that you were, I think you're under scholarship and you're playing a lot or as much as you could. And, you know, of course, trying to take in the city. Like, what did you do, and what do you tell cats to do when they're moving to a new scene? I know that this isn't all relative at the moment, because obviously shit's closed and it's a different scene. But, you know, eventually, hopefully things go back to somewhat normal. And what do you tell people about kind of getting into a scene and making friends or whatever?
I mean, the main thing is, like, I mean, the disillusion that I think a lot of people have is that they're moved to a city and they learn to play in school. If you're talking about students.
Yeah.
And what I kind of tell them, which is just what I saw when I was at school, is, like, the guys who could play, they already could play before they started the school. So it wasn't like they learned to play in school.
Right.
So I just try to tell them, like, man, if you don't have your stuff together at this time, you know, you have to get it together relatively fast. It doesn't mean that the best players in school are going to be the best players after school. It still means that you can, you know, those kind of lower level players can catch up. So it's not like the end of the world if you're in school and not really on that level yet. But it's just, you know, the school has very little to do with it. So I just kind of try to make them realize that the work is pretty much on them. And to make those connections in school, like, because for me, And I think for a lot of people, like, it doesn't matter what the level you're at, like, when you're in school, the connections you make in school, they continue for your whole career. So if you think of anyone like Brad Meldow and Peter Bernstein, like all meeting in New York at
and
the
Goldings
New School.
And Goldings too. And
yeah,
Bill
Larry
Stewart.
Goldings. And and then me and Rob and meeting like, you know, the Strickland brothers and like, you know, all Carlos Enriquez and all the guys that were going to New School. You know, it's like you make these connections that that last pretty much your whole career. And those guys, and everybody's getting work from different places. And then it all gets, you know, if so-and-so is playing with this band, then if they need a guitar player, they're going to recommend you. And it just, you start to work through your friends also, just like getting gigs and everybody's kind of like throwing each other's names around. And to me, that's the benefit of school. But you have to be already be pretty much prepared, you know? School for me is like a country club, you know? It's like you join and you hang and, you know, you become part of an alumni in a group of a class of players that are all going to graduate and hopefully soon after, like really kind of make it, make a scene. But it all starts while you're at school. So, I don't know. I feel like a lot of people just are at school waiting for the school to teach them how to play. But for me, it was just like everybody that kind of got something out of school already could play. And they used the school to their advantage. They used the faculty to their advantage. They worked, you know, I got gigs with teachers, you know, when I was at New School. Teachers that play guitar recommended me for gigs and
totally,
you know, so it kind of starts there. You can't just be like, well, I'm gonna go to school and then hopefully in 4 years I'll get good. You know, it's like, no.
Yeah. They'll take your money though.
Oh, they'll take your money. Yeah, yeah. For sure.
No, I'm with you.
But that thing of community though, like the community is everything, because when you have a group of people, like that's the thing, is you're going to make each other sound better. So if your friend has a gig and he hires you to play guitar, you're going to go there and he's going to make you sound fucking awesome. And you're going to make him sound better. Then you're going to do, you know, and then now you're in with that club and that club owner.
It's a different vibe than when you're, when you're meeting on the gig. So when you're going to school and you're seeing somebody every day, you start to create friendships. And then that goes into the music a lot of times, you know.
Big time.
So, yeah, I mean, that's for me, like, you know, what makes me and Kendrick and Robert Glasper and Mark Kelly, like, no matter how much time goes by or no matter how many scenes that we're involved in outside of that first scene, like, we're all still a part of that school. And when we get together and play, it's super, it's like really natural. Like, we're not struggling trying to make it work or anything like that. We can always resort back to, like, because we all listen to the same music and grew up playing together. So it's kind of that same thing while in that nurturing stage of school, you know. But the thing is, everybody already could play. So we were trying to take the talents we had and make music already. It wasn't like, oh, we got to learn how to play our instruments and like learn these songs and all this other stuff.
No, but you're always practicing, like, to try to learn new shit, of course.
Yeah, you're getting better.
Yeah.
But we got better at creating music, not really you know,
not at learning scales.
It's a different thing. And we were hanging, we're, you know, so I tell students that you got to hang, you got to go to the sessions, you got to go to people's gigs, you got to go to each other's house and hang and listen to music, not just play PlayStation or whatever, but like hang and listen to records. And
unless it's Jazz Guitar Hero. No, that's not a good
one. Yeah, exactly. You know, yeah, I mean, the hang is super important, you know.
Yeah.
And I feel like now, especially, like, there's no reason to really get that good anymore because everybody has social media. So if you have 1,000 followers and you have a social media page and you know how to post, you basically feel like you've arrived. You're a musician now. Like, you have something to show people. There is no reason to ever really get good as long as it looks good. As long as it looks like you're good.
Plus, so, you do a bunch of takes. You could do as many takes
as you
need.
You do it a million times. Yeah. But I feel like that thing of where, like, the best musicians were the only ones that people got to hear in the past, is that's gone now. So now we get to hear all the best musicians. And who's going to promote even more is the musicians that can't really play.
Yep.
They're promoting the hell out of themselves.
They have a lot of time.
That's they have a lot more time, and that's basically the only way that they're going to get noticed.
Yeah, so that's their battlefield.
Exactly. So it's just this weird thing where, you know, don't get trapped in that world to where, like, you know, you just because you can record an album easily and you have cameras and you have an Instagram page, it doesn't mean that you are legit, you know. It just means that you can act legit, but you still have to prove it, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, dude, every time one of you guys does like an intro, like if you start a tune and you do an intro, I just sit there like I'm just waiting for you to like stop and go, all right, let's retake. We'll do another take. It's just like, no, man. There's no retakes. Like you start a tune.
It's experience. Yeah.
Like that's becoming like different. You know, people don't do that. They do it all day on the internet.
Well, I mean, even that, I tell students a lot to practice, like, cause they're practicing scales and everything and they separate, they're doing everything except playing music. Yeah, so then exactly. I try to get them to practice performing, which is really weird to tell someone that.
Song.
But I was like,
yeah.
Yeah, I was like,
if you want to speak, you should maybe practice speaking. Don't just write it down.
Yeah, so I try to get them to practice, like just play a 2.5 minute version of a song. Like start, play an intro, play the melody with the chords, take a solo, then play the melody out and an outro, and then end it and record it and do it like 10 times in a row.
Yeah. And fall
and
on
practice
your face.
Getting through it. Like no matter.
It's fine.
Yeah, like falling on your face and like, having to get through it no matter what happens, like getting your, you know, painting yourself in a corner and then having to figure out how to get out. Like, because a lot of times they just practice in sections and they just practice. I have students that just practice chord changes that are not from any song. They're just like, oh, I'm just practicing like this, like pattern of chords, or I'm just practicing like 2-5-1s going down in half steps. I'm just like, well, you know, there's no songs that really do that, you know, or you could, or there is, you can find a song that has like that. So why not practice that tune that has that, you know?
Mm-hmm. Use that.
So it's this really disconnection with, they feel like to be a jazz musician, is like this complicated thing, but it's just the same thing as sitting in your room and playing Zeppelin. Yeah. You know, it's like, if you wanted to play Zeppelin, you got to listen to the record and get the right guitar sound, get the right feel, and learn the right notes, and then, you know, be able to just to really kill it. Like, so.
But even if you play Zeppelin, everyone knows this from their high school Zeppelin days, that if you play it in your room, as soon as you get on the bandstand, it's a completely different world. And, all of a sudden it doesn't sound or feel the same way, or people's time feels different, and it can throw you a wrench. So if you're not used to performing, like you're saying, you're screwed.
Right. All right, yeah, and then, of course, getting together with your friends and playing.
Right.
You know.
Which used to be easy.
Which used to be easy.
Yeah.
I mean, I think most college kids are just, they're still doing that. Like the really good students that are at Manhattan School, you know, they're still doing sessions and they're getting together and playing. Like, so, hopefully they're being, they're careful about it. But, you know, I would have been doing the same thing. There would have been nothing that you could have did to keep like, me and like all the guys I went to school with from playing. If we were just in New York City, we'd be like, man, just put your mask on. Let's go just meet at the new school and play a session,
I know.
As long as the school was open, or we would find somebody's house to go to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, I mean, that's all I did my first few years in New York, was just going to people's houses, doing sessions, playing at the school, playing gigs for no money or $50, or $100 or whatever. And that's
what you want to do anyway.
Restaurants.
That's the whole point that you're a musician. So it's just like, it shouldn't be, pulling teeth.
I mean, to me, it sounds
the question actually, I just thought about it. I don't know why I didn't think of it before, but the question I am getting from students is almost all of them are like, they're saying, I don't know about next semester. I don't know if I'm going to go back to school because of everything that's going on. And I was like, my response is always just like, well, what else are you going to do?
Yeah, exactly.
It's not like you're going to go on the road. I was like, you're going to be at home with your parents just sitting in there, like in your bedroom practicing. I was like, why? They're like, but I'm not going to get the most out of school. I was like, who cares about school? Like, really? I mean, in some way, like when I was in school, I just wanted to get it out of the way. You know, like for me, I wanted to be a musician. So, I don't mean like who cares about school. I mean, it's like, that's not the reason you should, it's just a weird thing to be like, to not do anything. Yeah. Like you're not going to be working. You're not going to be, going to school. So what are you're just going to be sitting there like wasting 6 months of your life.
No, it doesn't make sense.
Yeah. So I was like, you might as well just take advantage of like not the no pressure, like, and just get school out of the way. There's no interference. There's no gigs. There's no possibility of going on the road. I mean, for me, I used to feel guilty that I was always at school because some of my friends were always touring.
Yeah.
You know, like Robert Glasper was on the road, you know, like certain EJ Strickland was on the road and Carlos Enriquez was playing with Lincoln Center and I was in class. You know, I was like, I felt bad. Like I was like, man, I don't have a career. Like, and I was 19, 20 years old.
I know. It's literally what happened to me. I mean, I was at Manhattan School of Music for a year and I was a bass player and I had gigs and I decided not to go back because it was expensive and I was working and I just wanted to work and I did it and it was fine for me. But there was a lot of gigs. I mean, I was working 5, 6, 7 nights a week, you know? I mean, there's not that many gigs right now. And you're right. Like, what else are you going to do? Like if I was, I wouldn't just quit something. I just chose, you know what I mean? I chose to do something different, you know?
Well, the funny thing is like some of the best players were saying that, like, I don't know if I'm going to go back. I was like, man, like, there's no distractions, right? That way, like, you get like a whole year of school out of the way, especially if you're getting your master's degree, then you're just left with 1 year now. Like, okay,
totally,
that's easy, you know?
Yeah, it's one thing if it's like a financial burden situation.
Yeah.
But.
And none of them said anything about money. It was just like, they thought it wasn't worth the money. And I was like, you're not in school, you're paying for it. The reason why it's expensive is because you're buying your degree. Like,
I know. Yeah.
If you look at it just as that, I'm getting my degree, then why would you put that off for 6 months, you know, if there's nothing else going on?
No, I mean, it makes a hell of a lot of sense. I know what you're saying.
And also, this is the easiest time to get your degree because everybody's being so lenient.
Yeah.
As long as you're making an effort, no one's going to fail you.
What are you talking about? That was a sharp 11. My camera went out.
No, it sounds, you're right. I mean, it's depressing to think of like, just not going back to school and just sitting in your parents' basement and shedding. Like, I mean, you could do it. You could do like the Sonny Rollins bridge thing, but I mean, in a way, you should get to school.
But then you come back and...
Yeah, exactly.
It's still not, you know, I don't see anything happening for still another year.
I'm with you.
I don't think I'll be back in Japan. I don't think I'm going to Japan like anytime before this time next year.
Yeah.
Like that. Yeah. I mean, we would have to... What I think is going to happen is like gigs like that. Like if anyone's going to bring you to do a tour or to do 3 nights at the Cotton Club in Tokyo or, you know, to go anywhere and do a festival, you're going to have to show proof of a vaccine. So until we can get like vaccinated and then 6 months out to where they start doing bookings, you know, you get a gig and then like, what do you do in that 6 months in between? So it's still going to be a long time. I would say like 6 months before probably any of us are able to get vaccinated, then another 6 months before people start kind of tiptoeing back into like bookings. And then who knows when, you know, you're actually going to get a gig after that. So it's still going to be a year, I think.
We could do this for, you know, all night, but obviously we can't because, you know, I haven't eaten dinner and I don't know about you. So is there anything that you're doing that you want people to know about? Do you have a new record that you're trying to put together when shit cools down or anything like that before we cut this?
Yeah, all of the music for the new record is pretty much ready to go. Like, that's what I was going to do. It was either I was going to record a new record or I was going to get all this gear to do live streaming and teaching and stuff. So... For me, the sure bet was to do the live streaming and the teaching. So once I get all the money back that I invested in this, then the record will get recorded.
Great. Nice.
And it's going to be, I just don't want to do it before I want to be able to tour, you know, supporting the record.
Yeah.
So until that's possible, I just don't see a reason to do a record right now. The music. There's no reason, you don't have to have a reason to put out music, but for me, at least, like,
it's I'd rather just to play do it, gigs man.
Until...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, Tana Alexa had that problem. She was just like, fuck. You know, like, I prepped this whole record.
Yeah.
I'm going to release it, but now I can't go on the road for it. What the hell? Like,
I know.
That's tough, man.
Yeah.
No, that's tough. You know, but you're keeping yourself busy. It's not like you're just waiting to put a record out. So you're doing plenty of cool stuff. And, man, it was great catching up and
oh man
you know you're looking good you know and you're your live streams are amazing and everyone should check them out. And, you know, hopefully we can see each other when this is not, you know, the end of the world isn't here.
Yeah, hopefully soon.
Yeah, man. All right, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me, man.
No, take it easy.
All right. Peace.
Questions, comments, episode ideas, hate mail, you can get in touch with us by contact form, email, or voicemail, all of which are available at our website, theperformerspathway.com. If one of your questions or topics makes it into the podcast, with your consent, of course, you'll receive a shiny new $10 gift card for use at mymusicmasterclass.com. That's our sister website, which contains over 600 original educational videos from your musical heroes. So, look forward to hearing from you.